This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. For the past year, this world has been gripped by a global pandemic. Face masks and social distancing have become a part of our daily lives. But for much longer, the world has also been impacted by another crisis affecting daily life and threatening our health and the well-being of future generations, the climate crisis. Researchers at Yale University and George Mason University found the number of Americans who are very worried about climate change has more than doubled in recent years. Some experts call this eco-anxiety or climate grief, and there are mental health experts and programs to help individuals who are suffering. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss are psychiatrist and co-founder of the Climate Psychiatry Alliance, an organization building a directory of climate-aware therapists, Dr. Lisa Van Susteren. Dr. Lisa, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Our pleasure. The Environmental Defense Fund, senior climate scientist, and Boundless in Motion Zen priest, Dr. Kriti. Dr. Kriti, welcome to our program.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
Our pleasure to have you as well. And Northern Kentucky University student and Groundwork Ohio River Valley Climate Change and Green Infrastructure Impact intern, Jada Edwards. Jada, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. If you're listening and want to join our conversation to talk about your own experiences with eco-anxiety or climate grief, give us a call, 513-419-7100, or email your thoughts and questions to talk@wvxu.org. Lisa, I'd like to start with you. You are the co-founder of an organization called Climate Psychiatry Alliance, co-founder of this organization. You're building this directory of what has been characterized as climate-aware therapist. Give our listeners an overview of why you think this is necessary.
So, first of all, welcome to the listeners. I'm glad that they are here and that we have their ears. The directory is necessary, and it came to light that it was because so many people were calling me and others who had been writing about climate anxiety and asking for help. And they would say that they were going to their therapist, but their therapist either didn't know anything about what they were talking about with their climate anxiety, or would suggest that maybe it was anxiety that was referred. In other words, it was from something else. And so they really couldn't get the kind of hearing and understanding help they needed. So we put together this Climate Aware Therapist Network of mental health professionals who can address the concerns that are obviously mounting in the populace.
And so these aren't concerns that we might traditionally associate with a need for therapy, like difficulty with a marriage or at the workplace, family issues. Can we break it down more specifically when we discuss eco-anxiety and climate grief? What type of specific issues are patients coming to you with?
Okay, so that is an excellent question. I'm glad you brought it up. What is very important is not to, and I use the word pathologize, which means to pretend or to act as if there's something, a sort of a sickness in being worried about what we're hearing. I would say the real illness is in not recognizing that there is a problem and not listening to the scientists, just so we can use the model of COVID. But what I am hearing from people is that they are consumed with worry. And, you know, I got my own sort of pre-traumatic stress disorder. I'm worried about the future, I got to admit, a lot. And I am focused on it, sometimes to the detriment of my own health. Certainly, family gets sick of me talking about this stuff. But people need a catharsis. We need to talk to people who understand our feelings. And I have a lot of colleagues who will listen to me, and I listen to them. But the average person who is in the same boat with us, and not because it's a sickness, but rather a reasonable response to the danger we're in, they don't have it. And this is what we have put together to fill that gap.
Dr. Kriti, who uses just a single name here, you lead workshops and retreats, according to a report I read about you in the New York Times, for people who are experiencing what we've called climate grief. So if you're leading workshops and retreats, that says to me that you're doing more than one-on-one conversations and consultations about how to address this. You've got groups of people who are seeking out help. I mean, how serious and widespread are these types of feelings, eco-anxiety and climate grief?
Extremely common if you are listening to what is really happening in your mind, body, heart, I would say. And I would build on what Lisa has already spoken about. Before I answer your question, in a deeper way, I want to say, for me, grief is love and connection. We don't grieve something that we don't love, right? When a house plant dies under our care or gets shriveled up because we didn't fertilize it enough or water it enough, we feel the pain, right? It's like, oh, I don't like it. My house plant just shriveled. Now entire ecosystems are collapsing, right? Forests are collapsing. Ocean circulation is slowing down. And we are connected at a deep spiritual level that I like to think about. That's our larger being, our larger body. And of course, on the practical level, our health, our financial security, our children will not be able to see coral reefs. Just that wonder and beauty is getting lost. And of course, our health and economy are going to suffer profoundly. So anyone who is paying attention, anyone who's not fully distracted, is feeling that anxiety consciously, subconsciously, or unconsciously. Some people are not conscious. They are just constantly agitated and edgy and on the verge of, just having angry, rageful outbreaks without knowing that at least some part of their overall anxiety is happening because of ecological collapse that we are in the midst of, right? So this is extremely common. And as much as I am so excited, Lisa has this list of climate aware therapists, I should have that list handy because some people definitely need that one-on-one connection. And many of us are unable to afford one-on-one therapy financially, right? It's just not accessible. So what happens then? The scale of trauma and grief is so large. I'm a firm believer that we need community skills to hold that grief and that rage. Because for some people, it's not grief, it's rage. They feel the other side of grief. So let me stop here. Hope that made some sense.
Oh, it certainly did, Dr. Kriti. And let me just follow up, because with the number of people that are seeking out advice or help or answers to these feelings of grief and anxiety under which they're suffering due to climate change, when you break down their demographics, do any trends emerge?
It is, I would say all sections feel it, but young people are more acutely aware of it in general, because they have their entire lives in front of them. They don't want to have children. Millennials who are climate aware, are afraid to have children, right? And then one kind of grief or stress interacts with other kinds of grief and stresses. So if you are young and then you are a person of color who also might have racial trauma in their body, or you are a woman, or you identify with being LGBTQ, all of these stresses overlap, they interact and compound each other. And so the load that I see in people of color, young people of color, is in general higher, right? Now, I can't generalize it too much because someone might be older and not a person of color, but they are a grandmother who's just profoundly worried about the kids. So,
Well, let's turn now to NKU student and Groundwork Ohio River Valley climate change and green infrastructure impact intern, Jada Edwards. Jada, you are the young person representing young people on our panel today. Talk a bit about eco-anxiety or climate grief. I understand that these are emotions you've dealt with.
Yes, they are. I feel like as a college student, a lot of college students know what climate change is and what's causing it, but we don't realize how much of an impact that we personally have. And it's not something that's like openly discussed among college students unless you're in environmental science or biology classes. And with me personally, I'm worried about climate change and how many of our towns and cities aren't prepared for the increasing temperatures because they don't have tree coverage and shade availability. And something that really concerns me about the future is how humans have the ability to adapt to the different changes in the climate with air conditioners and technology that we produce. But a lot of the plants and animals we see today won't exist for the future generations because they don't have the ability to adapt as fast as we can.
When did this start to weigh on you and possibly dominate other areas of interest that we typically associate with people in your age range?
I would say I became more aware of it when I took an environmental science class in high school, and it kind of dawned on me that all of this is happening and it's not openly talked about in schools. And I would say that it kind of made more of a connection for me in college, just taking those environmental science classes and learning what I'm doing as a human to impact global climate change.
So, Jada, we're talking about the mental health impact of climate change, eco-anxiety, and climate grief. Have you sought out help, if you don't mind sharing? Have you sought out any type of help in that respect?
I've definitely noticed that climate change puts a damper on my mood, especially if I'm like driving past a factory or something and I see a lot of smoke coming out. I kind of like get lost in a spiral where I'm like, okay, this is happening. What can I do personally? And it does make me like really anxious sometimes, but I've never openly sought help for it.
Let's turn back now to psychiatrist and the co-founder of the Climate Psychiatry Alliance, Dr. Lisa Van Susteren. Dr. Lisa, you had talked a little bit earlier about how approaching mental health challenges related to climate change are different than those traditional types of issues we associate with people seeking out therapy. What have you had to do, if you've had to learn anything new in your approach to helping people cope?
So I've been in this space for more than a decade, and the coping has changed. Initially, most of what I was doing was trying to alert people to the dangers and feeling very frustrated that people did not see what I saw. But of course, as a mental health professional, that's what we do for a living. And my colleagues are becoming more and more involved because our job is to see behaviors that are self-destructive and to encourage people to change them before it's too late. So just like drinking too much having relationships that are self-destructive or anything else, our behavior towards the environment, towards Mother Earth, is also and has become a self-destructive process. And so initially it was to get people to awaken, my colleagues and the public. And now lately it's been to get my colleagues coordinating their own efforts and to make sure that we have a process by which mental health professionals can engage the public, and not just on one-to-one terms, but really taking initiative, seeing ourselves as, and I've been encouraging the professional organizations to consider a climate and mental health subspecialty, where we get out of our clinics and hospitals and offices and recognize that the power of our expertise to change behavior has really been left on the table, and that we need to go to legislatures, we need to go to county councils and city councils, organizing not only the information about what the mental health impacts are of our disregard for the planet, but what we can do, building, as Dr. Critis said, the sense of community solidarity. And I want to underscore that there is a huge push now to create what are called resilience coordinating councils within communities so that we can have a population-based, culturally grounded approach to preparing for what we need to be ready for and to change what we still can.
I imagine, Dr. Lisa, that you've got a go-to playbook for traditional problems that people might come to a psychiatrist for if it's like depression or dependency and those sorts of things. Is it more challenging to address people's eco-anxiety and climate grief when there's not yet a clear answer, at least in terms of policy, on how the world is going to deal with it?
You are absolutely right. In your toolkit, there are certainly many things that we can do for the environment and to restore our sense that we are living a life consistent with our values. That's very true, but it's much more difficult than some circumscribed problem, like I don't get along with my boss and it's ruining my life, or I can't sleep for some reason that you can identify. So when it's something as with the scale and scope that climate disruption or climate instability has, there are no easy fixes. And the only thing that really can change the future is when we take action. And it has to be individual action, seeing what our own personal contribution to the problem is and correcting it. That will reduce our anxiety, and especially benefiting from what happens when we work in solidarity with others. Joining groups, whether it's 350 or climate Citizens Climate Lobby, there are, of course, local groups. All of these things, brain scans even show that they provide us with this transcendent feeling of being a part of something bigger that has a unique healing capacity. So yes, the prescription is different. And yes, the prescription is very dependent on what we can personally do ourselves and in concert with others.
We will continue this conversation about eco-anxiety and climate grief just ahead. And a little bit later, the new Netflix series from producer Will Smith, profiling the impact of the 14th Amendment on our country and civil rights. One of these episodes focuses on same-sex marriage and the local man and local attorney who brought that landmark case legalizing it in the United States. They both join us. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue our conversation now on climate grief and eco-anxiety with psychiatrist and co-founder of the Climate Psychiatry Alliance. This is an organization building a directory of climate-aware therapists, Dr. Lisa Van Susteren. Also with us, the Environmental Defense Fund senior climate scientist and Boundless in Motion Zen priest, Dr. Kriti, and Northern Kentucky University student and Groundwork Ohio River Valley Climate Change and Green Infrastructure Impact intern, Jada Edwards. Join us at 513-419-7100. I'd like to turn back to Dr. Kriti now. Have you seen an increase in people seeking out help for these particular issues due to the pandemic? Are you finding that grief is piling upon grief at this point?
It sure is. And, you know, I get emails every month, if not every week, you know, when is your next grief ritual? When is the next rage ritual? And as I was referring to earlier in our conversation, these traumas, these stresses definitely interact with each other. And body doesn't know, you know, at a biophysical level, is the stress building up because of climate, because I am alone by myself without friends? Is it big job anxiety? Body just needs to release trauma, you know, access it and release grief. And so, yes, the short answer is definitely so.
Well, I just wanted to ask Dr. Kriti, I'm sure our listeners heard you say, you know, grief retreat and rage retreat. Could you just give us an overview of what happens at those?
So if it's a multi-day retreat, or even if it's a half day or a one day workshop, the basic paradigm is You need to feel safe and have a trusting container for you to really, truly, deeply access your grief or even rage or guilt, right? Sometimes it's fear. They are like different shades of the different sides of the same crystal. And we do our best, given the time we have, to create a trusting container and slow down. That's the first step, right? And really get in touch with your grief. And for the period that you are with us, for a half-day retreat or a five-day retreat, forget trying to take actions. I am a huge advocate for systemic actions, even civil disobedience. That's in my blood. But for the purpose of, for the period of these retreats, we just ask people to slow down, access sense of safety within their body, and connect with other people around them. And then we guide them through a number of steps, which helps them identify what are they truly feeling. Is it grief? Is it fear? Is it rage? And we give them ways to express it. And sometimes people are frankly shy. When I did my first grief ritual or two, I just saw others bawling and wailing and raging and screaming. And I liked it because they were reflecting my truth, but I couldn't access my own raw feelings, or I couldn't express them even if I accessed them. But over time, especially over longer retreats, people access that trust and safety within themselves. They feel comfortable letting out that primal, raw grief, you know, that voice of grief and rage within them. And the last thing I'll say is that it might feel counterintuitive. When you access that much grief and you process that much rage, you might feel, oh my God, I will get more depressed, because we spend our lives distracting ourselves from grief and anger. But what actually happens is you come out feeling more alive. You feel more creative. You can access that urge in you to take action more deeply. And you feel in solidarity with the community. Otherwise, I feel like I am alone and I have to deal with my grief and rage alone. But the wonder and beauty of these community rituals is that you are suddenly feeling a sense of connection with people who have grieved and angered with you.
Jada, you had mentioned earlier that you feel grief and anxiety when you pass a factory and smoke is coming out, as it reminds you of the oncoming and current dangers of climate change. But you are involved. You are taking action as an intern at Groundwork Ohio River Valley. Does taking action help you?
Yes, I would say that it does. Just knowing that I'm making a difference, may it be small or large, it just helps me to be able to cope with the fact that I know that climate change is occurring and it's very large scale. But like Dr. Lisa said, we need to look at what we can do individually and see how we can make a change within ourselves. So even if I'm just helping with tree planting, I know that eventually those trees will help clean the air. So it really does make a personal impact on me to know that I am helping the environment.
And Dr. Lisa, as we wrap up, people may be hearing the terms eco-anxiety and climate grief for the first time, and maybe recognizing that this is what's been bothering me. And how do you talk to them about this is something that is okay for which to seek help?
But what about help? How to seek help, or that they should? Did you say?
In case they feel like, gosh, I'm worried about climate change. Should I call a psychiatrist? How do you help navigate people who may not feel that that's the appropriate method?
Dr. Critti mentioned people can understand better that they're not alone, and the fact that you are doing this radio program tells people really that what they are feeling is really normal. If they are listening, if you're not upset, you're not listening, because we are hearing what's happening to our environment. We are seeing in many instances. And as Jada said, working personally, working in solidarity with others is a way for us to reduce our anxiety, because even if it's other issues in the formula, when you come to see a therapist, often is, what's the trouble? And by talking about it, by addressing it, by unpacking it, seeing its component parts and addressing those component parts, you can do a lot towards reducing that anxiety. So you tell it like it is with a patient, and then you work on the things that you can do to fix the problem. And that's the same model for climate anxiety or eco grief. Now, obviously, if you feel overwhelmed, you can't sleep, you can't eat. And I do know some people who got in touch with me, they're paralyzed. That's something more severe, and that should call your attention looking to see a professional who can help you specifically with this. But don't pathologize it. If you're responding this way, as Dr. Curtis said, there may be other things that are going on, and this may be simply an additional stressor. And these things can be fixed in the short term, and the long term is in the community solidarity and accepting our own call to action.
We have links to the resources discussed here today at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. My thanks to Dr. Lisa Van Suster and Dr. Kriti and Jada Edwards for being with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Wait, Michael, those are among the best questions I've ever heard. Did you come up with all of those?
Dr. Van Suster, and I do appreciate that compliment very much. I have a good team of producers here that are grateful for your compliment as well. I appreciate your answers to those questions today. Thank you for being with us. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.